Hear, hear.
Yes, Sharpie, and you are a key factor. We're not an invasion force. We mustn't kid ourselves that we are. So we'll hit and run. When you spot Panky, we're more likely to run without hitting.
I want to kill him.
Calm down, Dee Dee. You will. But we'll hit them when and where we have the edge. I want them to think that it's bad luck, disconnected accidents, rather than a campaign. It may go on so long that Jay-Z will be sitting where I am, and Janie will be sitting where you are. But we aren't going to go out in a burst of glory just for the hell of it. Instead, we'll kill Panky and keep on killing Panky and stay alive ourselves.
Sounds good, agreed Sharpie. I was getting mildly bored with being a middle-aged housewife, watching the mirror for gray hairs, but hunting Panky is far more fun than the parties I used to give. One question, Cap'n. Who gets my seat?
Sharpie, you'll stay on the Perceptron and the Spy Ray until you're senile. That'll give Warsel time to train Jacqueline as Super Sharpie.
I'll raise her for it. Captain, who mans the verniers when I'm superannuated?
Your daughter, Dee Dee, unless she gets gay so completely voice-programmed that verniers aren't needed. If so, Dee Dee can raise peonies while you collect stamps and I lie in the shade.
Don't like peonies.
Son, when I'm too old to fight, I'll go see what more Mobius can teach me. Then argue over it with Cardinge.
And when Janie takes my place as Astrogator, I'll become Chief Hatchet Man, who is dropped in at night to kill a key Pankera and make it look like an accident. The shadow strikes again.
Dee Dee, darling, by then you'll be through having babies, and I will make no objection to any danger you choose to risk. But if you get yourself killed, I'll be so lonely I'll remarry at once.
Zebediah, maybe we could go on such strikes together?
Perhaps we will, dear. In the meantime, let's stop yakking and get to work. Our first scouting trip, we started with Earth analog Tau-1-, because we knew Earth-0 was infested and Earth-Tau-10+, and therefore assumed that Panky were scattered thickly out 10+. I wanted a bracket on the minus side. We popped in and bounced high, then cautiously approached the night side, by doctrine. Lighted cities, radio, television signals, and microwave. High technology. I watched the screens and listened. Either they weren't using long-range radar, or Laverne's absorption coating was better than he had promised. Co-pilot, by doctrine, approach analog New York. Sharpie, it's yours, dear. At 18,000 clicks, Sharpie snapped,
"Gay, bounce!"
She added, "Infested, execute." Jake flipped us to Earth Tau 2- and bounced. Same routine, same story. Heavily infested. So was Tau 3-. We flipped to Tau 4-. Glaciation. We detected no radiation, found some dimly lighted settlements near the equator on the night side, primitive culture in the tropics on the day side. We searched at low range. Sharpie reported the planet free of Panky.
Captain Zebby, I think they like planets where the pickings are good.
Co-pilot, move on by routine doctrine. The ice was even farther down on Tau 5-. We placed a 6-transit girdle around it by voice program in 5 minutes. Sharpie found nothing but grass shacks and mud hovels. No Panky. Co-pilot, glaciations search, 200 quanta.
200, Captain?
Jake, we go farther. I want to be certain there aren't Panky out this way beyond the glaciations.
Certain? Could be a long, long way, Captain. You trust my theories more than I do.
Well, reasonably certain. Please start a 200 quanta search.
Aye, aye, sir.
At Tau 165, the ice was receding. We slowed down, spent a few minutes on each of the next dozen. Then we reached a high-technology culture, gave it slow and cautious treatment.
No Panky. Co-pilot, inasmuch as we can't search all worlds, I shall assume that the varmints never got this far, so we'll turn our attention to Tau plus axis. Comment, anyone?
Captain, said Dee Dee, can you hold long enough for me to change a diaper or two and horsewhip all of them? They're raising a ruckus.
Want me to ground?
Tisn't necessary, Zebediah, but I think I'll move Zebulon and Jacqueline into the dressing room for their bottles.
How long have we been gone?
3 hours, 24 minutes.
Why didn't you remind me?
Remind you? I was hoping you wouldn't notice. Zebediah, I feel more alive than I have since the night I met you. At last, we're doing something constructive.
Having babies isn't constructive?
It is, but not very. Any mother can do it. Having babies is like food and sex and sleep. Necessary, but not enough.
No comment. Seatbelts all. Let the kids yelp. Gay Deceiver, head for the stable. The following afternoon, Sunday, it took 45 minutes for Sharpie to establish that Earth analogs Tau 1 plus through 9 plus were infested, as expected. Another 10 minutes to prove the same for 11 plus and 12 plus. On Earth analog Tau 13 plus, we again ran into glaciations and no Pankey, and found the same thing on the next 31 worlds. We then checked the next 4 worlds, found them warming up, but no infestation. Jake, I assume that we've found a pattern. The vermin don't know about ta-axis or rotation worlds and don't go farther once they run into ice. That gives them 16 analog Earths, possibly all they want or can get.
Captain Zebby, I think it is all they can get.
Why, Sharpie?
I think they're stupid.
They damn near outsmarted us.
Oh, they're fast, and they're crafty and mean, but not creative, not truly intelligent. Zebby, I can feel their thoughts a little now, when I'm close to them. I haven't talked about it because they're nasty, brutish. I think that at some time, someone like Jacob built a space shifter, one that could move on Tau Axis. He tried it out and ran into them, and they enslaved him, or killed him, or both, then used his machine to infest other worlds. But that's all they can do. They're parasites.
What happened to your multi-person solipsism theory?
Your theory, yours and Jacob's. I just polished it a little. It's still there. This whole shenanigan feels like a horror adventure story by a writer in a hurry. Doesn't have to be logical, just as the Land of Oz isn't logical. This writer didn't fret about the loose ends, as long as he could peddle it. Hillbilly, exclaimed Dee Dee. That's the scoundrel I want to kill. The one who thought up Pankey. Are you sure, dear? Sure, I'm sure. Kill that money grubber and there wouldn't be any Pankey. But Dee Dee, if there weren't any Pankey, you wouldn't have met Zebby. I wouldn't have trapped Jacob, and we wouldn't have our mostly sweet but sometimes horrible kids. Would you rather be an old maid? I wouldn't.
Hilda patted Jake's neck. Jake said, thank you, my love. It's mutual. Dee Dee, you missed an elementary fact.
Pop, don't get logical. I'm glad I got Zebediah, but that doesn't make me like Pankey. I hate him.
Irrelevant. And I didn't mention logic. I said fact. An author's creations do not die when he does. You have observed that fact. Edgar Rice Burroughs died many years ago, and L. Frank Baum even longer. But Dejah Thoris is very much alive, and so is Glinda. Dr. Smith died around the time I was born, I think.
1965.
So? But we were with Worsell and Port Admiral Haynes and our other friends there only last week. So you would gain nothing by killing the writer who thought of Pankey.
He needs killing, for thinking of them.
Dear, dear, he may be a she, and a widow supporting 4 kids as best she can, kids like ours. The record shows clearly that many of the goriest, most terrifying characters were written by women writers. They seem to have special talent for vivid terror. Frankenstein, Northwest Smith, many more who used male pseudonyms. It seems to me that the female writer feels things more deeply, creates more vividly. And remember, Dee Dee, if she created Pankey, she also created you and Hilda.
What? Pop, I've told you again and again, I am not a figment of somebody's imagination.
I don't suppose Thuvia feels that she is either. But you can't have it both ways.
Why can't I? Who says so?
I said, the meeting is adjourned. We won't try to check Tau 10 Plus and Earth Zero today. We must decide whether or not to visit Helium first. Cart may have news for us. So let's get the kids out of freefall before we have used baby formula floating around aft. Dee Dee, I couldn't love you more if you were real.
When we get home, I'm going to bite you. You know where.
Dee Dee plays rough. Honey, you're as real as I am. Maybe more so. Gay Deceiver, head for the stable.
48. Dee Dee. Usually all of us, Zebediah, Pop, Aunt Hilda, and me, plan a panky hunt each Friday evening and carry it out Saturday afternoon. But this war conference did not go as usual. Pop started it by saying,
"According to my records, it has been over 7 months since we hit Tau 7 plus. It should be ripe. Zeb, how do you feel about it? Eager or hoodooed by it?" "Eager."
7 plus is where my husband lost an arm and thereby caused us to spend 3 months at Prime Base while he grew a new one. Null time at New Earth, of course. I knew that Zebediah's answer would be. It was mine, too. I wanted to kill at least 10 Panky on that planet for Zebediah's left arm, even though Dr. Phillips grew him another just like it.
"Dee Dee?"
"Double eager, Pop. I'm going groundside this raid. I've got a score to settle."
"Your privilege, dear, if Zeb approves. Hilda, my love, shall we hit target of opportunity? Or do you prefer full reconnaissance? 7 months is a long time."
"Neither one, Jacob."
"Eh? You have another target in mind?"
"Jacob, I have 16 targets in mind."
16? Asked Pop. "My dear, do you mean 16 specific targets? Or are you speaking of the 16 infested Earth analogs on Tau Axis? If it's the latter, I think you would better explain."
"I mean the latter, but I won't go into it, Chairman Darling, unless I have unanimous consent to talk at length, without interruption, before it is thrown open to discussion."
"I'll keep quiet, Sharpie."
"Me too," I agreed. What was Aunt Hilda up to?
"You have the floor, dearest. No time limit."
"Very well. But at the first interruption, I'm going to clam up, because all of you are going to want to interrupt. I must ask questions, but I want answers, not arguments, until I'm through." Pop glanced around, said,
"The chair will suppress any interruption. Proceed."
"Thank you, Jacob. Think back to the afternoon that you and Zebby killed our first Pankera by the swimming pool at Snug Harbor." I shivered but kept my mouth shut. "You men were discussing re-engineering the solar system. That solar system, I mean. Have you discussed it since?"
"But Hilda, my love, the circumstances are entirely diff-
Jacob?"
"Sorry. I discussed it once, simply as a theoretical possibility with Sir Austin. But it is not appropriate to their system. No need." "I don't think I've discussed it with anyone, Sharpie. It was just a dream, before we learned how tough the Panky are."
"You've both given up a magnificent dream. That's my first point. Dee Dee, how many Panky have we killed? Do I count those killed at Helium after we left?" "Count them separately. But how many have we killed, we four?" "I'm glad you want a separate count. At Helium, there were the 23 from their embassy that tried to refuse outgoing health inspection, plus an unknown number killed from later landings. Banths don't keep count, and nobody knows how many the Green Hordes killed before Earth Tau 10 quit trying to land ships on Barsoom. We four? Starting with the fake Ranger, and counting through last Saturday, I make it 1,089 kills plus 72 probables. What percentage is that of the total number of Panky on 16 planets?" "Why, Aunt Hilda, how can I even guess?" "Are there more than a dozen Panky left? More than 100? More than 1,000? 1,000,000? 10,000,000? Dee Dee, what effect are we having on their total number?" I tried to work an impossible problem, one in which the data were no more than samples of what Aunt Hilda had been able to sniff by perceptron from 10 clicks, or higher, rarely lower. Besides that, Panky breed, even though we don't know where or how. "Aunt Hilda, I don't have solid data, but the number has to be over 10 million, and there are almost certainly more now than there were when we started killing them. I felt suddenly depressed. But Aunt Hilda went on calmly.
I now have a question to ask each of you, one by one. It is not a rhetorical question. I want a factual answer, a deep-down answer, not a superficial one. Not the answer you think I want to hear. Not an answer, she looked at Zebediah, that sounds amusing. I want the truth. Zebby, why do you hunt Panky?
Zebediah hesitated, then grinned.
I've never been able to work up an interest in golf, and
Zebby. Zebediah's face instantly became sober. Then he looked puzzled and answered slowly.
Sharpie, I'm not sure. When we started in, I think it was revenge. I never did have any notion that we could hunt them down and kill them all. Oh, I was willing, but I knew we couldn't do it. They are too well hidden among human beings. Even with your warsel-trained ability to pick them out and bird-dog them for us, it isn't easy.
He looked at his left hand, turned it over, and looked at it again.
Sometimes it isn't easy at all. One can get so intent on not losing the target, not killing a human by mistake, that one can wind up being the target. But Sharpie, that adds zest to it. I wasn't joking when I mentioned golf. Hunting Panky does beat the hell out of golf, or any game. I find myself living from weekend to weekend, counting the days, anxious to hunt again.
Thank you, Zebby. Jacob?
But, my dear, as I recall, you ladies announced that you two were firmly resolved to hunt Panky, then agreed that we men could come along.
Jacob, that is an argument. It is not a statement of your reason.
But we could not let you go by yourselves.
Jacob, rather than allow this investigation to wander into bypaths, I'll withdraw my question and make a statement, one which you can deny or affirm. Before that night, some 5 years ago, when your daughter and I reinstituted the toast, Panky must be destroyed, you and Zebby were discussing how, or how soon, you men could go hunting Panky, while leaving us women at home. True or false?
Pop opened his mouth, closed it, and dropped his gaze. Aunt Hilda said gently,
Jacob, please answer me. I need to know.
I'll never know how much hung on how Pop answered, because I will never ask Aunt Hilda. I don't want to know. But I was scared. My husband saved it. He growled,
Jake, quit stalling.
Pop looked up.
My dear, please forgive me, but Zeb and I were discussing how we could do it without endangering you two and the kids. But we never figured it out. My daughter is stubborn and, excuse me, dearest, sometimes you are too.
Aunt Hilda leaned across to Pop, kissed him, caressed his face.
My gallant knight, there is nothing to excuse, dearest, nothing to forgive. Dee Dee and I knew, that's why we brought it to a head. Now, sir, if it pleases you, will you tell us why you hunt Panky?
Pop looked puzzled.
I thought I had covered that.
Not explicitly, sir.
My reasons are much the same as Zeb's. This is a good world we've settled in. I like it. Couldn't ask for a better place to bring up children. But, well, it's not enough to spend my time cobbling up inventions that have already been invented, even though it pays well. Zeb and I have such a backlog of gadgets this world can use but doesn't have that I've turned out only one truly original invention this year. And it's been even longer since I did solid work in mathematics. When Zeb and I are in the shop, we work, but most of our talk is about what tactics to use come Saturday. Sweetheart, it makes me feel alive. Can you understand that?
I certainly can, dearest man. Dee Dee, your turn, hun. Will you tell us why you hunt?
Huh? Why, you know why, hillbilly. I hate 'em.
You're not afraid of them any longer?
Certainly I'm afraid of them. I've never gotten over being scared of them. They give me the jumping willies.
I've been even more scared of them since Zebediah lost his arm. And feeling guilty about that, too. I wasn't covering his rear properly.
Dee Dee, you mustn't feel that way,
interrupted my husband.
Order, Pop said. Zeb, Hilda still has the floor and has yielded it for Dee Dee to answer her question.
Thanks, Zebediah, but I'll never be that careless again. Aunt Hilda, of course I'm scared of them. I'm jumpy every time we hunt, but only till you spot one. Then I'm anxious to make the kill myself. If you call it off, tell us you've lost it or that it's too hard to get at, I'm disappointed. But almost always we've made at least one kill, and we've averaged 4.188 per hunt. We're improving, especially since we started using random numbers and picking where to strike. Then there was that wonderful day we made 11 kills. Does that answer you, Hillbilly? Yes, dear, it does. Jacob, I now have the answers I need.
You're through?
No, I've just started. I want to discuss them. I think—
Privileged question. My dear, do you yield to Zeb while he puts his question?
Certainly, but I still want to speak my piece.
Go ahead, Zeb. Sharpie, you haven't told us why you hunt.
I will. I intend to. I've been hunting for the same reason Dee Dee hunts. It's essentially the same reason you gentlemen gave. I enjoy the hunt. I enjoy the kill. And that's why I'm not going to hunt again. Pop got that frozen look they tell me I get when something startles me. So I guess I did too. Zebediah's jaw dropped, and he stared at Aunt Hilda.
Sharpie,
he said slowly.
Are you ill? In the 12 years I've known you, I've never suspected you of even a trace of masochism. But that statement sounds like it.
No, Zebby dear, I'm not ill. I think I've been ill. I think we've all been ill. And I think we've lost track of what we were supposed to be doing. We've been hunting for sport, killing for the pleasure of killing. And that's not good. It's—
Sharpie, you're out of your—
Please, I'm not through.
Order! Zeb, shut your face.
I won't be long, Zebby. I've been the worst of all. While I almost never get a shot at one, I'm in on every kill. I hunt them down, and I coach you and Jacob in the stalk. Often we flash in, kill, and bounce out in under 5 seconds. I take pride in that. Best of all, I can feel the vicious vermin's thoughts when it knows it's been nailed. I relish it. But that's what's wrong. It's not what we set out to do. We've become blinded by bloodlust. We set out to exterminate them, kill every one of them, rid the universes of a particularly nasty breed of vermin. Instead, we've just been having fun.
But Hilda, my love, we can't exterminate them. You know that. I don't see anything sinful in killing as many as we can and in taking pleasure in it.
Zebediah said,
My turn to call for order, Jake. You're not through, dear.
Not quite, Jacob. I, too, see nothing sinful in enjoying killing anything as nasty as a panchera. But I do say that it's inefficient to waste time in useless sport. We don't know that we can't exterminate them because, so far, we haven't tried.
Please elucidate, dear. I, for one, do not understand.
The first day we arrived at Prime Base, almost 8 years ago our time, and about 6 months ago their time, my master and tutor, Warsel, said to me, mind to mind, in talking about how he had spanked— he didn't say spanked, but that was the idea— how he had spanked Sir Austin. I neither pleasure in it nor dislike doing it. It needed doing, I did it. While I don't expect us to think like Valancians, we can't, I blurted out. No, Dee Dee, we can't. But we can stop thinking like children. We can refuse to let ourselves be diverted by fun, even fun as exciting as risking our lives to kill vermin. Instead, we can and should go back to our original purpose, extermination. We can make a real effort to see whether or not it can be done.
I don't see how.
Zebby, of course you don't see how, and neither do I. Let's find out. We have the greatest mathematicians of three universes. Jacob, Mobius Taurus, and Sir Austin. We have Warsel, who could teach all of you what he's taught me, if you'll let him. We have great strategists. What would be the outcome if we asked Hal Halsa and Port Admiral Haynes to confer over our problem? There would be no language barrier. Hal Halsa is used to telepathy, and the Admiral has his lens. Dear ones, we haven't even begun to see what resources we have. Let's find out.
Manpower.
But Jacob, it may not be manpower we need. It may be brain power. Let's find out. I so move.
Second,
said my husband. Me too, I yelped.
Passed by acclamation,
Pop agreed.
Dee Dee, will you take notes? Put Ted Smith's name down. And Carteris, and Laverne. Would Mentor advise us?
We can ask Warsel, Jacob. It can't hurt to ask.
49. Zebediah. Minus 6 hours and counting. I, Zebediah John Carter, Quondam, Captain United States Aerospace Force Reserve of Earth Zero, definition of Earth Zero to follow, Quondam, research professor and playboy, skipper of private continua craft Gay Deceiver, and temporarily commander-in-chief, Rye Laugh, of Strike Force, the Number of the Beast, am making this running record for the benefit of history. Histories, or so I keep telling myself. The truth being that I am making this personal record to keep from jittering in front of my staff officers and the crew. If I can sit here and talk into this thing, maybe they won't notice that I'm as jumpy as an ant on a hot rock. Designations of universes and planets. The number of universes accessible via the Burroughs-Cardinge-Mobius transformations is 1.03144247 plus times 10 to the 28th power. Correct to 9 places, which isn't nearly enough. That sloppily inaccurate figure mislays a few billion or trillion universes. But what's a billion universes more or less when the total is so large that no human being, not even a Barsoomian, can possibly count it in a lifetime? Yet it is a small number compared with a Google to the Googleth power, another finite number which does not approach infinity. Infinity is not a number, it is a metaphysical hang-up. This number, 1.03 plus to the 28th power of 10, is sometimes, for no good reason, called the number of the beast. The expression the number of the beast is also used, for better reason, to mean the number of vermin we seek to exterminate on 16 infested planets, once an unknown number but now closely approximated. More later. How many there may be in the totality of universes, we have no way to guess. We may have to attempt to fumigate again in a century, or a millennium, or longer. Earth Zero, designated in writing as Earth Superscript Zero, no universe or sheaf of universes has a unique zero point. Any point may be selected. Earth Zero is so designated because Dr. Jacob Burroughs was born on that planet. The spatial axes of Universe Zero, containing Earth Zero, are arbitrarily designated X degree, Y degree, and Z degree. X degree is galactic north of the galaxy containing Earth Zero. Y degree is direction from Earth Zero of galactic center. That is the direction of Sagittarius, more or less. Z degree is at right angles to the other two. The duration axis of Universe Zero is T degree. The BCM transformations include two more duration axes, Tau and Te. Earth Zero does not use them, but universes that do use them are accessible by rotation with the aid of Burroughs-Thorndike continua devices. We use three more relative coordinates, which refer solely to a ship or other craft, not a universe. Length, width, and height, called L, W, and H, meaning fore and aft, thwarts ships, and up and down. Forward, starboard, and up are arbitrarily positive.
Confusing? Believe me, you can't get to the post office without a map, and sometimes it isn't easy with a map.
In this battle, we are concerned with 16 infested planets, each planet one spatial quantum from its two nearest neighbors, strung like beads along the hyper, or pseudo-direction, tau. All are analogs of Earth Zero, and all share duration along T-axis. There are many, many other analogs of Earth Zero, some of which use T for duration. For example, the current home of the Burroughs-Carter family, Earth Te-39+, and some of which do not use T for duration. For example, the world of Prime Base and the Galactic Patrol, and the world of the Land of Oz. Nobody knows how many Earth analogs there are, especially as any of the six known axes can be a duration axis, and any one of three of the remaining five can be spatial. This could be fairly simple if all shifts were 90 degrees, but angle can be divided into angular quanta, and it gets so out of hand that you wind up with the number of the beast, first meaning. Me, I have barely glanced at a few hundred of the universes and have lived for any considerable time in only five. Minus 5 hours, 13 minutes, and counting. This is being recorded in my flagship, Britannia 2, on loan by the Galactic Patrol, and is simultaneously being recorded via sub-ether radio in 16 command ships and at Prime Base, and an 18th copy is being flipped via Burroughs Thorndike message captures to a walled-off root cellar in our home on Earth Te-39+. Or perhaps I should say that I hope they arrive in empty air in that root cellar. If not, there may be a crater there instead, as we still don't know what happens when something goes wrong, and Murphy's Law never sleeps. But I have great faith in Master Technician Laverne Thorndike. In addition to my personal commentaries, all details of the battles on 16 planets will be recorded automatically and flipped inside an enormous spherical net in 24-hour orbit above Prime Base. Back to those 16 planets. To me, an Earth analog is a planet so much like the one where I was born that I can recognize its continents. The continental outlines may be changed by climate, glaciation, interglaciation, low mean sea level, high mean sea level. Luna and Sol are always recognizable. It would appear, not certain, that all or many of these Earth analogs share quasi-identical histories up to some branching date or event. At our present home, Earth Te-39+, the branching point is the early 1600s, when most of the ice melted and thereby changed the history and shorelines of the entire planet. Earth of Prime Base differs from Earth Zero at a branch point in 1965, when we had Humphrey for president. They got someone named Goldwater. Earth Tau-3+ branches about the same time, but in a different way. The sequence there was Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Henry Ford III, Carter. I noticed that name as it is my own surname, but Earth Zero had no prominent politician of any name. Earth Tau 3+ is worth noting as it is the most heavily infested of the 16. 1066 is a branch point. Earth analogs in which the Norman invasion never took place are in their history quite unlike the ones I can recognize somewhat. 1939 is another branch date. Earth Tau 2+ is one such, and worth noting because Jake, Dee Dee, Hilda, and I spent several weeks in that universe, not on that Earth analog. It's a dreary mess and will be hard to clean, badly infested, but on another planet several light years away and about 2,000 years in our future. And all four of us are now biologically about 25 years old. Desirable, very desirable, but it means that Dee Dee and I have a daughter, Janie, Hilda Jane, who is as big as her mother. The two look more like twins than mother and daughter. The discrepancy shows even more in the Burroughs family. Jay-Z, Jacob Zebediah, is much bigger than Sharpie and 3 centimeters taller than Jake. But anachronisms don't bother our kids. All their lives, they have experienced both anachronism and switching universes. They know that they may switch relative ages, too, either through living on different time axes or from visiting Doc Leif Hubert's clinic more than 2,000 years up Tau Axis, as we adults did, and getting rejuvenated, then returning. Like Gay Deceiver, Leif's ship operates both in space and time, but his experience is the reverse of ours. He traveled in time along T-axis quite a bit without leaving his native universe, Tau 2+, before he discovered that he could re-enter from irrelevance, null space-time, into another spatial axis. Whereas Jake and I have been aware of Gay's time-traveling potential from scratch, but have barely used it, both from lack of subjective time and from sheet funk, fear of getting hopelessly lost. Leif doesn't worry about that. His computer autopilot is a couple of millennia more advanced than Gay. She, even, has a personality without being in the Land of Oz. We ran across Leif at Prime Base during the several years, Prime Base times 0 years by New Earth time, of re-education we underwent before mounting this 16-planet battle. Dee Dee had her third child there, Ted, both for Ted Smith and E.E. Smith. Leif took care of her. He was there, so he told me, studying traumatic surgery and regeneration. But Dee Dee took a shine to him and asked him to tend her. Leif was well qualified. He told me one foggy night that he had delivered over 12,000 babies, about 50 of them his own. I mentioned it to him the next day, and he said, "I must have drunk too much." No matter. Leif is filled with stories, many of them contradictory. But he was lecturing in OB to pay for his additional training. Dee Dee could not have had a better baby catcher. Anachronism does bother me. I'm not used to being 25 again after having moved more or less gracefully into my 40s. But my background is not that of my kids. My great-grandfather crossed the plains in a covered wagon at a headlong 12 miles, 19-plus kilometers, per day, the longest trip of his life. I remember him. He died when I was 3. Our lives overlap. I bounce around the universes via a gadget I don't understand, stay 2 years at Prime Base, flip home to pick up some photographs, find the pot of coffee Sharpie made 2 years before, still fresh and hot, stop and drink a cup while I sort out the pics I want, flip back and find I've been gone no time. That's not future shock, that's everything shock. It was both Leif and Mobius Taurasse who caused us to back into this rejuvenation deal. One quick trip had given Mobius a taste for space-time universes travel. He happily accepted when invited to go to Prime Base to confer with Jake and Sir Austin, then moaned at dinner one night, in the jargon that he and Jake had worked up, that the most exciting mathematics of his life had been opened to him just as his life was closing. So much to do, so little time. Leif was having dinner with us. He seemed to understand the jargon. He's quick with languages. The next morning, Mobius did not show up on time for his daily wrangle with Jake and Sir Austin. Instead, about 20 minutes late, Leif appeared with this handsome young Barsoomian warrior who insisted, in fluent English, that, all appearances to the contrary, he was Mobius Taurasse. Then proved it by resuming the shouting argument he had been having with Jake and Cardinge the day before. An argument that at once became four-cornered as Leif joined in. It seemed Leif was a field theory mathematician as well as a physician and surgeon, a good enough one that Sir Austin took less than 2 hours to accord him the same rude warmth with which he generally treated Jake. So here we were. Dee Dee in her 30s, me in my 40s, Hilda in her 50s, Jake in his 60s, and all of us getting ready for the biggest trial of our lives. Sharpie conferred with Worsel about it. Then we all went with Leif to his home and came back the next day, having been gone 2 months. And we are all in our middle 20s again. I'm not going to try to tell about Leif's household and his remarkable family. There's a battle coming on. Minus 3 hours, 47 minutes, and counting. This fleet is assembled and now almost fully manned. The Barsoom brigades are here. General Hal Halsa just now reported to me. But we won't rotate until minus 10 seconds. whereupon all 16 fleets will do so at once, automatically, via sub-ether radio tick, with my trembling right index finger on the manual button, just in case Murphy's Law picks that instant to sneeze. Almost impossible. Laverne has been outwitting Murphy all his adult life. In the ensuing 10 seconds, each ship will report, automatically via sub-ether, to its planet force flag. Those 16 planet force commanders will report, rotated and ready, to me, via Burroughs Thorndike message capsules. Sub-ether radio doesn't work between universes, but Burroughs translation works even faster. If the messages are pre-prepared, they are, and the Burroughs Thorndike capsules are set to bounce to Earth Zero orbit, where I will be. But the capsules will not arrive in this ship. They will arrive in open space and at once signal arrival via sub-ether. Laverne outwitting Murphy's Law again. No chance is being taken of a capsule 30 centimeters in diameter engrossing 8.91 kilos blowing the bejesus out of Britannia 2. This should take 7 seconds max. That gives me 3 seconds in which to call off the battle by punching one button that could flip 48 capsules to 16 universes at 16 Earth analogs, with sub-ether automatic signal not to attack, but to rotate and go home to prime base. Otherwise, on the tick of 0 seconds, the attack starts in 16 parallel universes, tau axis. In front of me is an array, 4x4, of 16 lights. If they all wink green, the attack goes forward. If fewer than 16 come on, I'm supposed to make up my mind one way or the other. I've made up my mind, but I haven't told anyone. Not even my chief of staff, Gray Lensman Ted Smith. I shan't ask his advice. -2 hours, 31 minutes, and counting. Why did I get kicked upstairs to this useless job? Once the fighting starts, I can't affect it. Oh, theoretically I could, as there is a Valanchian lensman in each Planet Force flagship, and Worsel, here beside me, should be able to reach any or all of them. The 17 Valanchians have practiced dummy runs on Te Axis from -1 to -16. The link-up worked, after Worsel restrained all but 2, who got through the first time. Ted tells me that admirals rarely can affect the outcome of a battle. They establish battle plan and doctrine. But once the shooting starts, the unit commanders are on their own. I'm sure he senses my feelings. Not via lens. Ted is naturally empathic, and is trying to assure me that I am not useless. I reminded him that Kimball Kinnison had devised a way for an admiral-in-chief to handle multiple fleets during action. He agreed but pointed out that Kinnison's method did not apply to 16 parallel universes, but is about to be used by each of 16 planetary force commands. And so it is. How I got here. 1, I flunked out of school. 2, then I got drafted. Dee Dee and Jake and I all took sensitivity training from Worsel and Dr. Phillips, while Sharpie went to Aresia. No. I'm telling this in the wrong order. Hilda took a refresher with Worsel while Jake and Cardinge, and later Mobius, discussed the mathematics of an optimum strategy for hitting 16 planets to exterminate hidden vermin, each of the 16 being a unique problem and rendered enormously complicated by the necessity of not hurting the legitimate population other than by mischance, and that has to be minimized, and the need not to damage property unnecessarily. But this last factor was of least importance. Sometimes the only way to kill rats is to burn the barn. But the horses must be taken out first. I heard from Jake that the simplest planetary problem, Tau 8+, had 73 major variables, and the mathematics committee's first job was to decide which variables must be reduced to constants through reconnaissance before a strategy board could consider turning mathematics into logistics and strategy, after which weapons and tactics could be discussed 16 separate ways. All this took years. But they were prime base years. Time stood still on T-axis. Dee Dee had our third child, Ted, recovered from childbirth and was back to work,
while that pot of fresh coffee never cooled off in our home on New Earth, Ta-39+. But this trading around of time works two other ways also. Worsell, Cardinge, Laverne Thorndike, and Ted Smith all were needed in the war with Boscone. But they, even Worsell, could borrow time by flipping to T-axis duration on Barsoom. Laverne's first Burroughs Thorndike device had been installed, as promised, in a ship large enough for Worsell, and Barsoom had not only cleared out the Panky vermin, but also Barsoom was a place used to the idea that humans need not look like Homo sapiens. Worsell was a welcome guest in the palace, used our former giant apartment, and held honorary rank as staff colonel general. He could think, undisturbed in helium, for weeks or months at a time, on our problems or his own, and return to prime base at the very instant he left. So could the others. But the third method of manipulating time could be used to freeze an instant both in prime base and on our 16 target planets. Go to Leif Hubert's home some 2,500 years up T-axis in World Tau 2+, stay there as long as needed, then be reinserted at prime base or elsewhere with no elapsed clock time. I don't know how Leif's ship works. Its technology is far in advance even of that at prime base. It looks like a huge flying saucer and has no machinery in it that I recognize. It is usually piloted by one or the other of Leif's sisters, although that piloting seems to consist solely in telling the autopilot in unstructured language, I think it is unstructured, what is needed. Minus 2 hours, 7 minutes, and holding. Something odd is going on with Planetary Attack Force Earth Tau 3+, and I've had to make my first decision as Commander-in-Chief. Fleets have been showing up out of nowhere and asking to be attached to that particular planetary strike force. They are not unwelcome, as that is our most difficult target, most heavily infested, millions, and the Posenian lensman who reconnoitered it reported apologetically that no accurate count could be made from space. They extrapolated that the planet would sterilize itself in 10 to 100 years, leaving nothing alive above sea level, and that might be the logical course to follow. In this, I disagreed, as did Hal Halsa, Haynes, and Kinnison speaking through Worsell. The purpose of this multiple strike was extermination. If we left untouched the worst infested planet while waiting for it to cleanse itself by suicide, we could expect the other 15 to be reinfested before that happened, as useless as excising a skin cancer while ignoring a deeper malignancy. Instead of letting it be, we assigned our heaviest task force to that planet, and now we have over twice that number of strangers asking to join that task force. Gray Lensman Ted Smith sees in it a possible Trojan horse. I'm sure that it is not, but I am not going to explain, and I have not invited him to read me by lens. Instead, I have given orders that Worsell, Hilda, and all Pisenian lensmen attached to the total strike force number of the beast are to search for Panky at safe distance in all these new volunteer ships. If a ship has Panky in it, blast it out of the sky at once. No quarter. No prisoners. If a ship has a dead space in it that our perceivers can't reach, bring major force to bear on it and give it an ultimatum to open that space at once or be blasted. Along with this, I have requested Prime Base, Laverne via Haynes, to be prepared to attach Burroughs Thorndike capsules to any cleared ships, set and sealed to be triggered by the zero signal to flip to Tau 3+, then to countermarch to prime base on signal from the flagship of Tau 3+, then self-destruct. Not a bomb, just internal self-destruction of the space-time twister, plus the same internal self-destruction if anyone attempts to open the capsule. Now I think I know why I'm here, to give this one order, plus orders pursuant to the same end. This will take time, so we are holding the countdown. This will not affect the timing of the strike because we are not yet in duration on T-axis. I've told Ted to advise all planetary unit commanders that they may, at their discretion, stand down from alert until notified that count is about to resume, and asked him also to keep me and unit commanders advised as to Worsel's and Laverne's progress, with time projections estimated in real time. While we waited, Worsel tutored Jake, Didi, and me in a limited sense of perception for Panky, and I flunked. Not totally, with Sharpie and Worsel both working on me, I reached about the level Sharpie had reached when we first started hunting. That is, I can spot a Pankera via Perceptron from about 20 clicks, even in the dark. With my bare eyes, I can spot one up to 2 kilometers by its gait or other movements. My brain unconsciously does analysis of its unhuman movements, but I can't strip a crowd of all clothing and pick out Panky by appearance, which Hilda can do, and which Didi and Jake have learned to do. But hell's bells, I have always known that I was the only non-genius of us four. I'm smart, and also clever with my hands, but even my children are brainier than I am. Of course, they're half Didi. Worsel quit trying to coach me into something beyond me and shifted to sharpening my one wild talent, hunches that warn me of danger. I relaxed and let him fiddle with my mind. I can't be hypnotized, but I can let myself be receptive as easily as I can place a block against pain. So Worsel sniffed around inside my skull, found the area of my oddity and helped me to strengthen it, extend its range in time and space. That's why I know today that these volunteer strangers are not Trojan horse Panky or tools of Panky. But I haven't hinted this to Ted Smith, and they are being inspected as carefully as if I strongly suspected that they were booby traps against us. But aside from my minor ESP, I have another reason to assume that their wish to ally with us is sincere. As these space legions have reported in, I have recognized almost all the names they call themselves. I have met them before. Where and how is mentioned elsewhere in these multiple memoirs, but does not belong here. Still holding at -2 hours, 7 minutes. Worsel offered no encouragement to Sharpie when she had asked to go to Aresia. He had thought cast to all four of us,
"Dear little No Mustard, you have no need for a lens." "I neither need or want a lens."
Hilda did not speak aloud, but her words echoed back to us from his mind. We needed mentor's advice. Was our project hopeless? Were we wasting your time and ours?
"One never goes to Aresia. One is summoned. Hopelessness in a worthy cause is no excuse for abandoning it. My race fought without hope for many generations. Then hope appeared. You and yours may do the same." "Yes, my teacher," she answered sincerely and dropped the matter.
4 months later, Worsel stopped in the middle of a lesson, looked surprised. How? All his eye stalks stiffened at once, and thought cast,
"Captain Zebediah, you, Mr. Burroughs, and Dr. Didi will go at once. Capture a Pankera and fetch it to me. I will take it and Dr. Hilda to Aresia."
I answered, "Aye, aye, sir," sensed that Jake was about to object, so I snapped, "Stow it, Jake. Lifeboat rules."
In the 5 minutes it took us three to reach Gay Deceiver's hangar, Jake said,
"Zeb, I was not going to object to Hilda's going to see Mentor without me. That would be foolish. But they aren't leaving till we come back, and we need her on the hunt. Hilda is the most perceptive of any of us in spotting the beasts."
"Correct. Worsel may be sending us on a field test, find out whether or not we can work without her. Didi, you will man the Perceptron. Jake and I will make the capture."
"How?"
"Once we are back inside with it, you will close doors and bounce about 6 times without waiting for seatbelts, door seal check, or anything else. Just get us out of there, fast."
"Yes, sir."
"Jake, this may be a field test for us three, but I think it is more likely that Worsel, or Mentor, as Worsel seemed simply to be repeating Mentor's orders, Mentor considers us three expendable, but not Hilda." Didi looked impassive, but she was not annoyed or hurt by my interpretation. Jake just blinked and said,
"You may be right, Captain. I think you are, but I'm biased."
Despite the shortness of time involved, Laverne Thorndyke arrived before we could man the car.
3 stun guns, he said. They'll fit your Delameter holsters. 1 zap should immobilize any living mass up to 300 pounds. Zap twice if you must, but a 3rd zap is likely to kill your prisoner, unless they are extraordinarily tough.
They aren't, I assured him. We've killed enough of them to be certain of that. But what are these other gadgets? Hand cameras?
Tangle cord projectors. Fired like any handgun, 6 cords to a magazine. Accurate to 50 yards. But I suggest you get closer, because a cord around the neck will strangle, and Warsel wants it alive. Good hunting.
It took us 4 days to get a prisoner. Dee Dee spotted them again and again, and under conditions in which I would not have hesitated to kill by L-gun with Sharpie coaching, but not under conditions in which we could be sure of grounding, capturing, and getting away again. But at last, Dee Dee spotted one, on the ground, with neither human nor another Pankera anywhere close to it. Most unusual. Jake transited almost to ground level behind it. I squatted Gay in. We came busting out both doors. By pre-plan, Jake zapped it with his stunner while I fired tangle cords and got 2 cords around it before it fell. I dragged it upright again. Jake put 2 more cords around it. We pulled it into the car, and Dee Dee closed doors so fast that I almost caught a foot. Then we were in free fall far beyond the orbit of Luna before Dee Dee quit telling Gay to bounce. What we had captured looked like a sweet old lady to me, but Dee Dee and Jake saw it for what it was. A Pankera, and I sensed it even though my eyes told me that it was human. The damned thing tried to bite me while we were getting it belted down, on the deck back of the bulkhead. The stun effect hadn't lasted long. Then it argued indignantly, protesting that kidnapping her must be a mistake. She didn't have any money. We just made sure the straps were tight while avoiding its teeth, then scrambled into our seats, belted down, and Jake flipped Gay to prime base. Laverne was still standing where we had left him, in the hangar.
Did you get it? He asked. Or haven't you gone yet?
To him, no time had passed. I said wearily,
We got one. Strapped down in the after compartment. Somebody else can take it out. We're too beat. But warn them to be very careful. The pesky varmint bites.
The warning was unnecessary. The thing was dead. Warsel accepted the corpse without comment. He and Hilda left for Aresia. We made 5 more captures, 2 without using stun guns, but always with the same result. Dead on arrival. Captured, Panky always suicide once they knew they could not escape. How? We never learned. Still holding at minus 2 hours, 7 minutes. All the volunteer strangers have been inspected and cleared. Laverne's men are installing capsules. Several of their unit commanders maintain that they don't need them. But from my point of view, I need them. I want to put every ship into position simultaneously in 16 universes. I don't insist that they countermarch back to Prime Base, but if they don't want that option, I've told Laverne to set the capsule for destruct after flipping them back to Earth Tau 3+. Happy as I am to have their help, I will not turn over to strangers Burroughs Thorndyke devices without retaining control of them. But I wish I could spread these reinforcements 3 ways. Earth 0, Earth Tau 2+, and 3+. But they all want to hit the last one, Earth Tau 3+. I suspect that I know what that means, but I'm not going to mention it to Dee Dee. The idea upsets her. I shan't mention it to anyone. I find it spooky myself. That planet is going to get one hell of a shellacking. With these reinforcements, we have enough troops to match the Pacenian highest estimate of infestation 1 for 1. 1 hunter for every Pankera. What I don't have is perceivers to spare. We barely have enough Pacenians, Valanchians, and trained humans for our own ships, spreading them thin. The troops from Barsoom are going in with none, relying solely on their own telepathic talents and on the noses of hunting callots. 3 of those Panky corpses were chopped up and used to train Barsoomian hounds in the scent of Panky. Each of the stranger volunteer commands has messaged me that they do not need perceivers from us.
They claim that they can infallibly tell humans from vermin, and that the only human casualties, if any, will be in their own ranks. I don't know, and it is too late to test them. They want to hunt Panky, they are welcome, but I am not changing the order of battle. I have ordered the Planetary Force Commander of Earth Tau 3+ to assign them to sectors as mop-up forces after he withdraws his regular forces, or, at his option, to use them simultaneously. He is a gray lensman I have never met, but I assume that he knows more about unorthodox fighting than I do, or he would not be wearing gray. I'll hold the countdown until he is satisfied that he has his greatly expanded force in hand. He has just advised me that he recommends that the entire force be allowed to eat, sleep, and eat again, a full stand-down while he rearranges his plan of battle and issues operation orders. I have signaled all fleets that hold will continue a minimum of 10 more standard hours, with recommendation that they order eat, sleep, eat. Ted and I are about to do the same, leaving Junior Flagstaff on heel and toe in Flag Ops. I'm tired. Why in hell does Didi insist on grounding? Sure, she'll be in armor while she bird dogs, with a squad of Valerian Marines around her, but I think she's pregnant again and hasn't told me. Why I'm here? Because Mentor advised Haynes to assign me as CNC, that's why. And it still doesn't explain it. But Mentor's advice is why I have thousands of Galactic Patrolmen volunteers, hundreds of giant transports, and endless cooperation. And all this happened after Sharpie was summoned to Aresia. Up to then, we had received only training and advice for a hopeless venture. We had Port Admiral Haynes's sympathy and cooperation, but no troops, no ships. He had his own war on his hands. We aren't slowing up the war with Boscone. Our one battle, even if it lasted for weeks, impossible, will be on T duration, zero elapsed time at Prime Base. Only this hold in countdown uses up Prime Base time, and Haynes has not objected. Still holding. I've just called Jake on a tight circuit and feel better. We may continue to make Earth Te-39+ our permanent home, but I've never felt happy about being chased off Earth-0 and becoming unpersons. I have proposed to Jake that after this battle and campaign is over, we go home to Earth-0, claim our rights, recover whatever has been confiscated, and rebuild Snug Harbor on its original site. Fill that crater. Restore the contours. Rebuild. Find the source of that spring and restore the pool. Maybe we'll use it simply for an occasional vacation, but we shall return. Jake greeted the notion enthusiastically. It bucked him up. I know he's been worrying about Sharpie, because he will ground as a bird dog, but she will ground elsewhere, as ordered by the planetary unit commander. She'll be a troubleshooter. In armor, certainly, and surrounded by Valerians commanded by her old friend, Colonel Van Vogt. But that doesn't keep Jake from worrying. Sharpie apparently enjoyed every minute on Aresia. Counting resumed. Now minus 2 hours, 4 minutes. If at the end of this Didi is dead or missing, I'm going to turn command over to Ted, climb into Gay Deceiver, here in one of Britannia 2's holds, and hunt Panky. Oh, there'll be Panky to hunt. This battle won't kill them all, we know that. The predicted outcome, Mobius, Jacob, Cardinge, Haynes, Halsa, Kinnison, is a kill score of 46% plus or minus 11%. We can't expect to find them all. Too few perceivers, not enough troops. We do expect to break the back of their organization, put them on the run. Then extermination will be up to the humans of these 16 planets. At plus 10 hours, recall will sound in all helmets. 30 minutes later, our transports will bounce. Then starts leaflet, radio, and television barrage. This portion is complex and is tailored to each language area of each planet. I described one case. Historians can look up the rest at Prime Base Library. Some details require need-to-know clearance at top level. For South America, Earth-0, text is in Portuguese and Spanish. Pictures are in color pseudo-stereo. And the message amounts to, "Behold your enemy. These parasites are hidden among you, disguised as human,
creating dissension, consuming your wealth, eating your flesh and that of your children. Find them, kill them, root them out, and so forth, emphasizing that vermin dare not expose their bare arms or legs. Pictures show why. This message will be believed solely because most humans of all 16 planets will by then have seen one dead Pankera or more. Immediately after the battle, plus 11 hours, billions of these leaflets will be loosed at 10 clicks H over G by Burroughs Thorndike capsules. Then our transports will flip back to Prime Base and capsules will home automatically. But propaganda barrage will continue. Leaflet, audio, stereo, as long as needed, until Pacenian perceivers report each planet clean. If the humans on the planet fail to clean it, if Panky regain control despite this barrage, and their radio, television, and other media show this to be true, and Spy Ray and Pacenians confirm it, then comes the grim decision. Sterilize it. Reduce it to slag. Remove its atmosphere. Transit it into its sun. Hit it with antimatter. Translate it to an empty universe, there to freeze. The patrol knows a dozen ways to destroy a planet, if necessary. But it will not be allowed to live. A Typhoid Mary able to infect other planets, other universes. The humans of the planet will be given ample opportunity to destroy their tyrants. But they must free themselves. Freedom can never be given. It must be won. I will have no part in a decision to sterilize, if there are any. No one has suggested it, and it is beyond my competence. It will be made at high level. Haynes, or the Galactic Council, or Kinnison, or possibly, probably, Mentor. In a few hours, I can stop being a fake admiral. If Dee Dee is safe, we can go back to Prime Base, and our family. I have a growing hunch that Jake and Hilda will live through it. All nine of us will go to the Land of Oz for rest and recreation. But if Dee Dee does not come back, I can live in Gay Deceiver for weeks, months, hoarding her juice for kills. Dee Dee's gallant majesty deserves a huge honor guard of slain. Gay is fully juiced. If I'm careful, I should be able to offer her a full regiment. But if they get me instead, perhaps I will go wherever Dee Dee will have gone. That is a mystery beyond me, but I can hope. If I live through it, I'll first provide for our kids. No problem there. Janie is already adult, studying math, and has her eye on the Council of Scientists. Cardinge says she'll make it. Zebulon doesn't know at this point whether he wants to enter Wentworth Hall or go to Barsoom and become an honorary red man, a helium warrior. His Aunt Thuvia wants to adopt him. Baby Robert calls Sharpie Mommy just as he does Dee Dee and ignores both Jake and me. He won't miss me. So I'll enlist. Apprentice spaceman. Boscone must be defeated. That's as important as exterminating Panky. I once thought I knew how and when the Bosconian War would end, but the memory has faded. Probably just a vivid dream I had at some time. I do have such dreams, and sometimes have trouble distinguishing a memory of a vivid dream from something that really happened. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little lives are rounded with a sleep. As may be, I am a warrior. Not a playboy, not a phony professor, nor was I ever intended to sit under my own vine and fig tree where none can make me afraid. Earth Te-39 Plus is a fine place, just right for solid citizens and growing kids, but the quiet life is not for me. The Galactic Patrol can use professional soldiers. If Dee Dee does not come back, that's where I'm going, after I supply her with an honor guard. If Dee Dee does come back, I'll do what she wants to do. Somehow I always have, even when I thought the decision was mine. But what Dee Dee does and where she goes is never dull. Dangerous sometimes, but not dull. Private message from Leif. After this ruckus, Maureen wants your family to visit ours. My reply? Affirm if distaff confirm. And wonder whether a way can be jury-rigged for Leif's ship to carry Gay.
She doesn't like to be left behind.
Order of Battle. Earth Tau E. Sparsely Settled World. Commander Strike Force. Brevet Colonel K. Ketchkan. Mounted Green Warriors. Earth Tau 3. High Technology, Aggressive. Commander Strike Force, Lensman, Volantian, Ardval. Second Hat as Chief Perceiver. Volantian strike divided into three groups. Transports unload troops in stratosphere, then bounce. Retrieve in 1 hour same locus and strike elsewhere. Strike 30 major cities, starting with analogs Washington, Peiping, Moskva. 6 perceivers to each group. Earth Tau 2. 19th century tech. World population circa 2 billion. Commander Strike Force General Kartoris. 10 hours low-level sweeps of population centers. 1- and 2-man scouts and destroyers. Ground fighting with trained Kallets at commander's discretion. Earth Tau 1. Similar to Tau 2 but larger population. Commander Strike Force Hal Halsa. Mounted Red Warriors with Kallets. Tactics at commander's option. Earth 0. High tech, aggressive, population circa 5 billion. Commander Strike Force Lensman Admiral Trestrail. First strike by tech ships to put out of action all electronic communication of all sorts, including commsats, manned and unmanned, military sats, 3 lunar bases, L5, military communication centers, all major powers, including Australia, Middle Kingdom, Meiki, Middle Europa, USA, Nippon. At plus 10 seconds, second strike places imperv walls around capitals and major cities. Plus 15 seconds, strike teams ground, all armored. Chief Perceiver second, strike lensman Tregency. First, Assistant Perceiver Dr. D.T. Carter. Perceivers for each strike team, each guarded by Galarian Axe Marines. Strike shifts. See Appin 3 note. Flag Commander channel all planets above Earth 0. Random transits, Appin 1 Earth Tau 1 Plus, see Tau 1. Strike Force Commander General, Raj Retner. Earth Tau 2 Plus. Low population, regressed tech, many vermin. Note, major areas on each continent radioactive. Anti-radiation armor and self-contained breathing units at all times. Strike Force Commander, L. Hubert. CS, L. Monroe. Tactics, C. Appin 5. Subject to change by Strike Force Commander, all times. Earth Tau 3 Plus. C. Earth 0 Commander Strike Force, Valanchian Lensman, Convarl. C. Appin 2. Second wave mop up Legion's strike at plus 10 hours, 1 minute. Commander Second Wave, General in Chief, Rufo. CS, G. Graham. Sky Commander Dr. S. Balsamo. See Appin 7 for unit commanders and sectors. Recall controlled by SkyCom, not Flag Number Beast. ETAU 4 Plus. Minus 1 hour, 14 minutes, and counting. Didi just called me via secure screen, sub-ether. Just as well that it was secure as she used unladylike language. Seems Trestrail has forbidden perceivers to carry arms, and she had been planning to dedicate 10 Panky to my left arm, then 30 more for our 3 kids. I told her that I could not give orders to a unit commander concerning a particular person under his command, but she could resign at any time up to count 0, since this entire force was totally volunteer. She stuck out her tongue at me. Her helmet was pushed back. Trestrail was right, and Dee Dee admitted it. A perceiver can't pick targets for a group while fighting herself.
How do you like my new summer clothes, Zebediah?
I like it just fine. That patrol armor will stop almost anything. But I don't see how you can stand up in it, much less walk.
Powered, dear. I can jump over a building in it. You've been too busy to watch me practice. Besides that, this hunchbacked look covers personal Bergenholms and a Burroughs Thorndike Twister. I can go free, bounce, or flip back to the ship, and some other options just by voice command.
She grinned.
Neat.
I looked at her and was suddenly very grateful that Warsel had spent so much effort in extending my single ESP talent. I had a quick prevision of her,
covered with sweat and triumphant, being helped out of her armor. Dee Dee was going to live through it. I know. But I didn't say so. Bad luck. She might take foolish risks. What's that big bulge in your helmet?
Oh, the all-inside perceptrons Laverne has been promising? I can glance up and spot a varmint 10 times as far. It has the crosshairs deal in it, too. I look directly at the target, hold down this belt switch, and every man in my strike group sees a target with crosshairs on it by repeater. I don't tell which one to make the kill. That's handled by the group commander, any of several ways. I just pick out targets as fast as I can, and that's pretty darn fast, darling.
How do you take a pee in that thing?
She stuck out her tongue again. None of your business, sir. But I can. Zebediah, have you eaten anything? You must not reach the end of countdown with an empty stomach. That's an order, sir.
I've got some sandwiches here. I've been nibbling. At -5 minutes, I'm going to take a pep pill.
Me too. So is everybody. Aunt Hillbilly wants to say hello.
Put her on. And behave yourself, Dee Dee, hun. Come aboard here as soon as we flash back to Prime Base, will you please? I won't be able to leave the flagship at once.
I will, Zebediah. Promise. Just as soon as I finish thanking my guards and my strike group. Oh, Leif wants us to take R&R with them. Told them it was up to you. Here's Hilda. Bye, love.
Sharpie's elfin face appeared.
Hi, Admiral Bly, honey.
Again, I had that sudden burst. Sharpie was going to make it. Now, if Jake would call. But suppose I failed to get that burst with Jake. Leave well enough alone, boy. Hi, Sharpie, hun. What do you wear under that?
Jewelry and perfume. What did you think I would wear?
You'll get bruised.
No, padding is built into the armor. Has Jake called about Maureen's invitation?
No, but Leif did. It suits both Dee Dee and me.
Then it suits everybody. I'll tell him. Now I'll get off this VIP circuit, Admiral Honey.
Wait a half. I don't have any lights blinking. Sharpie, you said that you would tell me, soon enough, why I was picked for this preposterous job.
Sure you want to know?
If I could reach through this screen, I would paddle you.
Would you kiss it afterward? All right, I'll tell you. It wasn't for your brain power, dear, or your Napoleonic genius.
I know that. But why was I kept out of action by kicking me upstairs to a dummy job? It's humiliating.
Zebby, it is not a dummy job. It's the key job.
I know better. Everything is pre-decided for me. Everything.
Not quite, Zebby. Mentor said that the patrol had all the expert strategists and operations analysts and tacticians and logistics experts that any force could possibly need, but that you had something special the others could not achieve.
What? I can wiggle my ears?
Luck, Zebby. That uncanny ability of yours to do exactly the right thing in an emergency. That's why Warsel has been staying close to Prime Base. Not to train Dee Dee, not to train me or Jacob, but to get you honed down to a fine point in your unique talent, so that you can use it today.
Be damned.
No, you won't, Zebby. Something will come up, something unexpected. You will make the right decision, and we will win. She was sure of it.
Did you ever make up your mind whether Mentor is a he or a she?
She's both. He's a committee. When Mentor greeted me, looking like Glinda's twin sister, I told him to knock off the nonsense because hallucinations didn't fool me. So she changed into Santa Claus, or everybody's favorite grandfather, and I told her to change back because I got along fine with Glinda and wasn't interested in looking at whatever life support equipment a creature so advanced used. So he went back to being Glinda's twin, and I accepted the illusion. It was nice, and we got along fine. Part of the time, we talked about you. Mentor told me to tell you that if you ever want to visit Aresia, you are most welcome.
They are not going to put a lens on me.
You won't be offered a lens, Zebby, because what you do doesn't require a lens. You don't need one any more than I do. It was just a friendly invitation.
Well, Sharpie, I do have lights blinking now. See you after.
Kiss, Zebby. Don't get ulcers.
-4 minutes, 50 seconds, and counting. We're going to win. I suddenly know it. We're going to exterminate that filthy breed. Not all today, but we will.
and we'll rebuild Snug Harbor. Minus 10 seconds and counting. Vermin, we have returned. 0.
This concludes the reading of The Pursuit of the Pancara, a parallel novel about parallel universes, by Robert A. Heinlein. Copyright 2020 by Robert A. and Virginia Heinlein Prize Trust. This book was read by James Patrick Cronin, Jennifer Jill Araya, Richard Ferrone, and Bernadette Dunn. All members of SAG-AFTRA. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Spectrum Literary Agency and was produced in 2020 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.